Welcome to Dominate for Two, a War Machine and Hordes podcast.
I'm Alex.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Benjamin.
And today we are joined by the one and only Corey Doyle. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So this is immediately on the back of you winning the Seattle Open. Were you already qualified for IG at this point?
For IG, yes.
Yeah, so you got a ton of IG points, which doesn't really matter. And then you got into War Machine Weekend, which I believe you weren't already qualified for.
I was not.
Did your wife sign off on the St. Louis trip?
we sort of Dutch base in it, but I'm still sort of in the doghouse for driving 6 hours to Seattle for Mother's Day. So I may have spent my day fixing lights on a camper trailer and putting up new blinds and doing handyman work around the house and mowing my lawns. And I'm still hiding out in my shop.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was going to be on Mother's Day until like 2 weeks before the event. And at that point, I'd already gotten like hotel and airfare. I was like, oh, well, I guess I'm just going to be an asshole.
Yes.
Yeah, luckily my mom doesn't give a shit because like we don't talk anymore. But my wife really wanted a day off without the kid around.
Should have taken the kid with you.
War Machine is childcare. There's a podcast topic.
I would have brought him with me, but he's 13 and almost the point where he can play War Machine. Like we play at the house a little bit, but not enough that he could focus for a whole event. And he plays Kator, and no one likes Kator.
No.
I like Kator visually. I just wish they did things.
That's a good way to put it.
I mean, I don't know how to enunciate it better, but like in Mark II, I was just like, oh, you guys are either like Krix or you're like Signar, but you're always worse.
Well, I think he's building a skew list. It's actually worse than mine.
Ooh, what
it's
is it?
All the Winter Guard, the cheapest unit they have, and it's like 6 units. And Alexia plus the UA.
Huh. Sounds obnoxious. What's the Warcaster?
It's Eros 2, so it's all tough and a solid ground bubble.
Oh, I see. He's going for the clock strategy.
100% clock strategy.
Yeah, I've seen that list before.
Yeah, it's horribly grindy.
Yeah, it's super grindy. It was sort of fun to run Striker 2 into it, though.
Back when the horses electro-leaped off their guns.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of deaths.
It was a fantastic counter to Kane 2 at the time, though.
And Kane 3. Have to see that sound. I mean, I guess you just run at him. I don't know. We're getting off topic. Yeah. So we brought you on, Corey, to talk about, firstly, the Seattle Open, and secondly, the concept of going first versus going second, whether you try and play different, like if you try and like play to be more resilient to going second, or if you like put more thought into your lists into going second. And that's kind of going to be the through line for tonight's episode. So real quick, you were playing Mercs. What were your lists again?
I played an ADR. So I had Ostrom, mostly heavies, but with the 5 units to get them all advanced moves. So I have 3 bashers, 2 drillers, 2 blasters. So the bashers are the slam jack. It's like 9 points for a arm 19, 28 box heavy or 26 box heavy. Then the drillers, their cheapest heavy is like a 10 point speed 4 mat 6 heavy. It's amazing. The blasters are the spray jacks. My 4 solos in the base list were Eris 1, Huck Chuck, Alton Ashley, and Kel Balok. Then I take the Forge Guard Artillery Corps or the Horde and Hold Artillery Corps, 2 Min Forge Guard, 2 Kiaz Eliminators, Ian and Holt. And the solo choices are because in ADR, you can ADR out your 7-point solo for a 3-point solo. And then you just have a bigger sideboard by putting all the expensive ones in your list. And then you just ADR out what you don't want. My ADR was Gorman, Ragman, Orin. And I think Orin and Ragman were in every game I played. So I almost always ADR'd out someone to get one of those guys into my list. And then it was another blast, so 2 more blasters, 2 gunners, and Anastasia. So Anastasia's in there for the games. I really think scenario presence and going first is important. So like games like Spread the Net, where if I can get up the board, I can contest your flag on turn 2 and still score mine. So it's nice to be able to just swap her in. My other list is Magnus 2, 2 Nomads and a Vanguard. Anastasia, Huckchuck, Orin, and Ragman. Eris 1 for solos, and then Alexia and the Risen, 4 max steelhead units and 2 min steelhead units. With the ADR being Pressgang or Renegade Eliminator, my intention was to never play my ADR for Magnus. Like I've played about 70 games of that list. And I did the solo swap out, so where it just had all the super solos. And I found that I spent too much time thinking about what solo to put in. And he's not utilitarian enough to give much to the solos. Like he's got Bullet Dodger, and that's all he's going to do to help them. So your solos, I find that I'm just so used to that rhythm of playing, knowing where Orin's going to be, knowing where everyone's going to be. I don't want to swap that out. So the ADR was, that's what I have in my case. It equals 39 points, so it makes the list legal and lets me play ADR with Ostrom. Ostrom being way more utilitarian. So like having the ability to put in Kel Balok to just do 6 points, no tough. Mm-hmm. Or swap in Alt Nashi in case you're playing into a Beast Break and you have good lines of sight. Or having Gorman DeWolf for when you play into Teps or Signar, because Teps or Signar don't like being blind.
That's really nasty right now. And just like Rust. Like you can get Rust, what, like a 6 damage swing in that list?
If I play Ostrom, I can Rust with either Huckchuck or Gorman. I can Ragman and I can Lady Anne and Hope. But I don't think I ever had all of them in the same list. I actually don't think I swapped Ragman in for any of my games in that list.
Fair enough. You only have the one unit of Hammer Dwarves in the main version of the list, right?
I have 2 men.
Oh, 2 men. Yeah, yeah. That's it. Okay. Well, I was playing my same pair from Kingdom Con. I think Alex was as well.
Yep.
Did you make any tweaks, Alex?
Nope.
Okay, so let's just dive in real quick. Masters starts Saturday morning. We're all shit talking. Jeff starts us off. What's your round one, Corey?
My round one was a gentleman named Dan Roberts playing Kator Zarkova. Zarkova won. And I, of course, dropped Ostrom. Scenario round two is title belt. So this one was... Was this one barbell?
No, I think it was Outlast 2, the flags and the circles.
You're right. It was the two flags, two circles. So I opt for Ostrom because he's got the he's playing Zarkova 1, but he's got the spray ponies. And something about having sprays that kill a bunch of dudes makes me not want to play Magnus in any way, shape, or form. And I'm not really overly comfortable with Zarkova. I've only played into her once, and I don't want to take a list that I'm unsure about. So like I've played Ostrom for 2 years now. On and off, and I played him a ton in Mark II. And he's like the only caster I play that didn't change at all. That's he just got better nice. With power up. So like it instinctively is really easy to play. His spell list is really similar. So I drop Ostrom. He wins the roll to go first, opts to go first. I pick sides. I pick a side where I know I can put Ostrom up pretty aggressively and keep him alive, which lets me power my jacks up. I get lucky with a couple of early shots with the fire for effect mortar and Kel Balok. Brings down a couple of ponies with Eris in the mortar, and it just sort of collapses one of the circles. I'm able to score two on turn the bottom of two by just clearing zones. He jabs in really hard to stop me. I bulldoze two models off my plague. I'm able to clear both zones again and just score three on the bottom of three.
Oh, that's real bad for him.
Yeah, he got in hard. He had a shot at Ostrom, but I was behind a forest, so getting to him was really tough. Mm-hmm. And then I got pretty lucky. Like I said, I got pretty lucky with some dice rolls, like blast damage on one of the Kiazi horses, kill the horse. So it's a boosted 7, takes out an arm 15 horse. So like rolling 13 on dice pretty consistently through the game. Mm-hmm. So you gotta get lucky to win. And that was my game. I thought I was probably in the worst shape of the tournament, chicken wise shy of one other game. And I just got lucky on dice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was my round one.
Okay. Well, my round one was against Chris Birch, and he was one of a very few number of players I've actually seen running Nemo 3 at a tournament over the last couple of months. So the matchup came down Nemo 3 versus Zadesh 2. His other list was Haley 2. Like small footprint army. I was pretty confident about dropping Zadesh because counter charge is pretty effective at dealing with some of the more outrageous effects of control. And the list was specifically designed to beat Nemo 3. So he won the roll off to go first, shoved all his models forward, got his gun ranges very far forward. I did not deploy super optimally. Like my denial and bonus cloud pieces, like the Mist Speaker or the Bog Trogs, were not really in the right place. So I moved my Artis and my Archidon and my Siege Animantrax forward, got the Krayl bubble on the Siege Animantrax, put up a Cloud Wall to shield Zadesh. Zadesh is safe, Battle Charged is up, Inviolable Resolve is up on the Animantrax. He goes and decides he's going to try and assassinate me because he really doesn't see the attrition out as being a good way to go against a bunch of ARM 23 heavies and a temporarily ARM 24 battle engine coming at him. So he concocts a crazy plan where he takes the Firefly on Jake's, has Sidekick up on it, and he's going to run it past my Artist Soldier. And I'm like, you know, okay, if you run past this soldier, like, cutting through his melee like this, I'm just going to pull you and it's going to be over. He's like, ah-ha-ha, Sidekick. Can't be pushed or slammed, you see? I've got you stopped there. And we're like, okay, great. He moves his Firefly. Next stage of the plan, run the Lancer and force hammer the Firefly twice to get it right next to Zadesh in the Cloud Wall. And I'm like, oh, you've got me screwed. And he's like, yep, I've got you. Oh, shit. Sidekick stops the force hammers, doesn't it? So he pulled the plug on that assassination run, basically after feeding me a Firefly. I was not positioned, like, not developing that peace freedom. I was not positioned to use counter charges to stop the Firefly. But it turned out to be fine. My army started attritioning against his, and after his feet turned, he simply did not have the damage to take down the rest of my army. So I crushed the table and won on scenario.
Fair enough. I had a relatively straightforward game. I played against Max H. I didn't write down the full last name. He had Assyria and I think Ron. And I just knew I was going to play Kolgrim because Ron doesn't play into Kolgrim at all. I've just got like a ton of spell immunity, like Earth Blasting. It's just all bad. And he wins the roll off and goes first. He made a bit of a mistake where he fed me his Arknode for no reason. Like, I think it, like, lived with one box, but I, like, I sprayed it pretty bad. I don't really think... Does Blinding Light prevent spells?
I don't remember offhand.
But either way, it didn't matter, because I have Owl's Wisdom and Arcane Vortex, so, I mean, he just gave me a free piece. And then he set up for, like, a big alpha turn. He, like, ran his... He was running the Dawnguard theme. He ran his Dawnguard Sentinels around, hit Assyria behind them, and put her in Arcane Vortex range of... all that stuff and her Colossal. She's like, oh, you can't kill me back here. I'm like, okay, I run my Earthborn. I start spraying my Earthborn in the back. Doesn't matter how much you're camping, you're arm 13 and dead. And so I just bottom a 2 to him. I did, so going second, just kind of tying back to that, going second, I definitely did feel pressured. And I think this is just in general a troll's problem. Is since we want to be dumping so much fury into the stone, and with Kolgrima, who wants to do work with her fury, there's a lot of tension there if you don't go first.
Right.
And I felt very threatened by the Dawnguard Sentinels.
Yeah, you're unpacking and setup fury is immediately competing with your need to do work fury right away. So you can't necessarily fund all the things you would want to have happen on your opening turn right out of the gate like that.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily have the extreme threat ranges to, dissuade people from pushing into me. I don't have, like, enough range to get at people who run too far forwards at me. Like, I threaten 19 inches from my deployment, or 19 inches from my deployment line, which is, what, 29 inches? So they can basically get to, like, pretty close to halfway up the board, and I mean, there's also lateral shifts and stuff like that. They can get a pretty good board presence without me bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And Kolgrim really doesn't like that because she's got a few pieces. I don't really like playing the super long game with her. My goal is to hit you first really hard and either assassinate you then or hit the things that Mulk's afraid of and position him somewhere where he can go on to your caster the next turn or force you to play so scared you start throwing away pieces you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's way harder to do when you're going second. So that's round one. Let's move on to round two. Who'd you play in round two, Corey?
I played a guy named Jeff, one of the locals from like the Seattle area. Super good guy. He was playing Kolgrim and Sons of the North. So I think he had two heavies. Those wonderful fair and balanced ninja bears. because everyone loves those damn things.
10 points, baby.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so good. He had a full unit of Fenblades in his list, too, which, you know, sort of I don't like because it's just a ton of guys. I felt really good after my first game. I'm not overly, like, worried about Cold Grandma for the most part unless she has Mulg. So I don't have a ton of play experience into her, though, because we have one local troll player here, and that's the only guy that has trolls, and he plays Madrak one more than anything else. So I opt to play Ostrom again just for comfort zone. He wins the roll to go first, and this one we're playing is Dumbbell. This is the Dumbbell one, because he moves up super sort of aggressive, as fast as he can for trolls, but trolls are relatively slow. So I position at the edge of his threats and like the half inch back, right? So I have pretty good threat ranges in the list, like the Basher threats 15, 14 and a half of the slams, the Driller threats 14, the Forge Guard threat, I think it was speed 7, 10, they threat 12. So I set up decent range, and then I remove, because he just blitzed the Fenblades at me, I trigger Vengeance, but Kel Balok removes 2, the Mortar removes 2, Aris removes 1, and in that I actually clip the UA for the mini feet. So like he loses a ton of stuff in the bottom of 1, just because he misguessed ranges. Forgot snipe was a spell, so like you can snipe Kel Balok, he gets 2 shots with snipe. And that just removes 2 trolls, right? So like I remove a bunch of models, he vengeances. I gave him the 2 Kiazi Eliminators to charge and one of my heavies. He charges Pow 12s against armor 19, does, I don't know, 6 points or 7 points to a bash with a couple of charges. Can't hit the Eliminators because, well, they're Eliminators. They just don't like to die. On my right flank, I'm able to hold and get a good position after his turn. He pushes him pretty hard. The left flank is sort of where we fight a bunch. So, like, he comes in, positions that side really well. My 2 I feet, and I just sort of jam everything I can at him to just try to clear zones. Fail to clear zones, fail to score any points on bottom at 2. He removes 1 of my spray bunnies, 1 of my drillers, and 1 of my bashers on his 3. So now I'm like down a bunch of heavies on my feet turn, which really sucks when he's on feet turn. But he didn't touch the Forge Guard, which are sort of the key to the list. So the Forge Guard getting to the champions on my left. Miss because they're death 14, which I guess is a thing in melee. So I kill like one of them. Huckchuck comes in though and removes 2 Tuffalo, 1 with a lucky shot on a bomb, and then 1 with his hammer. Because I think I spike boxcars, because that's the thing. But the Super Souls on the right go to work again, kill the rest of the Fenblades. The Kiazi go in. I push the Mauler with a slam out of the zone. I finally score 1 the bottom of 3. And we go back and forth for the rest of the game trying to score points. I think he scores 3. I end up scoring 4 more. I win on turn 7 by 2. And the game goes to about a minute 80 left on clock. Or a minute 8 left on clock. So we're both super low on clock, and that game went like the distance.
Mm-hmm.
And that game ends with me winning on scenario. Or on tiebreakers.
Nice. So it's you just had like too much stuff in the zone / too many points.
Once I got the champions a little down on the far side, they were too far away to come across the right, and I'm able to sort of like block off the right zone. And then once I'm up by 2 points, it doesn't matter if he scores if he can't get into my zone.
Right.
So I don't mind just quick ending a turn, putting more models on the line and being like, I end, we each score 1.
Mm-hmm.
And eliminators are like super hard to kill when you don't have a fell caller. And I was able to remove his fell caller a little earlier in the game. So now he's trying to hit def 17 with like mat 10 champs.
Mm-hmm.
So you duck in behind them, you keep tying them up. I bought like 2 turns with champs on that side, which is what I think gave me the win. And Huckchuck being an absolute champ, which I think is like the theme of this entire tournament. My buddy painted up my Huckchuck for me, and he was amazing.
Yeah, Huckchuck was pretty useful all weekend from what I saw.
Yeah, I think single-handedly pulled 2 games out for me. Not this one. This one he just made it. He tilted it better in my favor, but I think there was my third round game, I think Huckchuck was really key in the win. And my last game, Huckchuck was pretty key.
Yeah, Huckchuck might have been a little bit key in the round 3.
Yeah, but I don't want to spoil or anything. So,
okay, Alex, how about your round 2 real quick?
Well, my round 2 was against John Fares. And his pair was Alara 2 in Defenders of Ios. and Kaylissa in Defenders of Ios. So Kaylissa had the double halberdiers, double battle engines, some shooting heavies, and some miscellaneous stuff. Alara was double halberdiers, what are they called? Rissavos defenders and Nis hunters, and then the Helios and some miscellaneous stuff. This was the one game, like, this, I didn't play Zadesh, or I didn't play Morgul all day, and this was the one game where I really regret that not being the case. I got super psyched out by his Kaylissa list because there's so much stuff there that does and can ignore stealth. I was worried about my primary defensive abilities being compromised and just losing all my stuff off the board. But the reality is that Kaylissa list does almost no damage, and if I drop Zadesh, you know, he just loses super hard into it. So he dropped Alara, and all those units, all game, I was just dying for Morgul's ability to control that. He goes first, advance moves, runs up his stuff. He's kind of wary of the Siege Animantarax and doesn't push it all the way to the hilt, like between the Siege Animantarax and the Artis soldiers with AD. And then I react by having the Animantarax push up, kill some stuff, start positioning my Artis where like a couple of guys can get on him, but it's not enough to do real damage, and just stealing board position inch by inch. He then turns around, continues to consolidate position. And like, it's weird because he went first, but in many respects, I actually got the benefit of it just because of how he chose to seed and move board position. The one exception being his Nis hunters, which circled really hard around my right flank. The Bogtrog Mistspeaker went into them and weirdly held them up for a long time. But eventually, I decide to commit. Send in a soldier and an Archidon to kill half the unit of halberdiers on the right flank, and send in the Animantarax to do some more damage to the halberdiers and clean up most of the Rissavos defenders in the center, and then just pile up my battle group behind the initial engagement line so that, you know, he'll counter kill probably my Animantarax and maybe put some chip damage elsewhere, and then I'll get to swing into his entire army with my whole battle group. He'll, in retaliation, kill, like, a heavy or two with the Helios. I'll take the Helios. It'll be game over for me. Not so. So John's dice go absolutely bananas, and where I was expecting basically to just lose the Animantrax and take some chip damage, like, the two half units of Halberdiers and the less than half of Rissavos defenders take my Animantarax and two of my Artis soldiers and two of my Kreas and throw down a bunch of incidental damage besides. And it was like just a massively big swing turn. And I'm like, holy shit. You know, the average damage roll coming at me was like a 16 on three dice. Like, I was not prepared for this. And I wasn't psychologically prepared for it either, and I was just incredibly frustrated by that turn. I start turning around, doing the initial phases of like, okay, what's my recovery, and just getting abysmal rolls to hit and return, and the tilt just intensifies, and I like have to take a few minutes like, okay, not even gonna look at the board, just gonna think calm thoughts. The thing is, in order to do this, John had to take like 25 minutes on his turn. And, you know, I could tell, okay, clock is a potential out for me here. But I went on tilt so badly, like my ability to plan effectively just went out the window. And I wasted a bunch of cycles on actions I didn't take. I turn around and basically all the clock advantage he'd handed me, I gave it right back. So I cleaned up a bunch of his warriors, scored the center zone, and cleared the Pain Knight. He turns around, takes my last Artis soldier, does some other moving around. I send a Gladiator and Zadesh into his Helios and just have absolutely horrendous dice and leave the Helios a little over half dead. He turns around, kills my Gladiator. He's down to like a minute something. Zadesh and the Agonizer go, giving him flank, and kill the Helios. I'm down to like a minute. He moves around, makes some points. I move around, make some points. He moves around, makes some points, and then with like 30 seconds left, Zadesh charges Alara, and I just clock out rolling attacks on him.
Womp womp.
Yeah.
Yeah, clock management is one of those things I've been running into the more I go into tournaments. Is like locally, I typically don't have to worry about it just because at the local level, it's very rare that somebody will surprise me to the point where I basically have to burn 10 minutes trying to like put my head back on straight. But like when you're going to these conventions and you're playing people like Corey, like Jaden, like people who are like big in the community and are like good at the game, they can just get you in ways you're totally not expecting and rock your world. Dice here is also, it's sometimes it's just dice.
Yeah, yeah. And normally I'm great at clock management. Like, I'm one of the fastest players I know, but it was tilt management that really killed me. Like, I was just so flummoxed by his turn, and I just did not recover in a timely manner. And it really bit me in the ass. I think if I had, like, just taken a shorter, more effective turn, I would have had a very real chance of clocking him there. But, you know, like, my mental management of my own space just wasn't there, and it cost me the game.
Okay, let's move on to round three. Corey, would you like to do the honors?
Sure. So round three was the... I'm tired. I just finished a game. I think I was actually finishing packing models up when Jeff went and did the pairings. So like I heard my name shouted. I heard your name shouted. I'm like, okay, I'm playing Mark Grohl. I know where I'm going to go. I'm in the other room. I walk in. I'm tired. I look over and I see you've got Cole Grandma with Mog. So it's like the list. I really don't know if I want to play Magnus into. But then your other list is like champions and the Winterstone for the +2 strength and another, the Glacier King. So I'm like, well, the King's going to kill two heavies on his own. He's going to screen the heavies with champs. I can't play, I 100% can't play Ostrom into this list because I just lose because the Glacier King's just either going to kill Ostrom on turn two or he's going to just eat a heavy a turn while champs eat the rest of them. So I'm stuck playing Magnus.
So that's actually really funny because I dropped Madrak because I thought you were just going to straight play Ostrom because at Kingdom Con like a month ago, Jeff Everett just like spanked me multiple times with Ostrom really badly, like into Cole Grima. He's just like, I don't care. Like, I'm just going to style on you. And then so I was like, okay. Like, he told me Madrak was unplayable into Ostrom, but I'm not sure if I agree with that. I want to see how bad it really is. And then you drop Magnus and throw me for a loop, because I think I would have preferred to play Cole Grima into that, for sure.
Yeah, so my hope was that you were scared of playing Cole Grima. So the local I have plays Madrak because I play Ostrom. So like I don't get experience against anything else because it's Madrak list. I don't play Jeff's list. Jeff's list runs Idrians and runs double Max Forge Guard. And runs a bunch of dudes and some utility pieces and like 8 gun bunnies. So his thought is he can just constantly just run behind and push models where he wants them. But I only run 2 or 3 spray bunnies. I run 2 drillers and 3 bashers. And hitting death 16 in combo with my heavies means I need to boost and roll a 10. So half of my like free slam charges aren't going to do damage. And then you've got tactician. So you charge everything. You never can't not. You, as long as Madrak is in the game, you always get to charge me, which means you're always doing 4 dice, what master dice off 7. And I'm just losing heavies. And you power the strong, so it's actually dice off 5s. And I take like 9 points of damage from a guy and 4 guys kill a heavy without trying. And then I counterattack. I give it a bunch of focus and I kill maybe a champ because, you know, I walk in with my sustained attack drill. I boost to hit, I hit. You're just going to let that guy die so I don't get my sustained attack. And now I've got to spend 1 to buy and 1 to boost. And I'm only doing dice straight. So yeah. Like on the second guy, you're going to be like, I'm just going to sack that one around because you got no more focus. And now you killed 1 for 3 focus and a heavy, I killed 1 champ. And if you toughed, it's even worse for me.
Yeah, that's so fair. But yeah, I was definitely very like shell-shocked because I was like, oh, I did not want to play this game.
So I get lucky. First time in that tournament, I win the roll to go first. Anastasia giving it to me, which was nice.
Yeah, that super hurt me. I mean, like, I knew that I was probably not going to get it because you had, like, what, an 80% chance once you have Anastasia?
Yeah, and I think I rolled a 5 right off the hop, too. So it was like, I'm just going to win this roll or tie and we get to roll a second time. So I felt really good after the roll. I deployed and ran up aggressively. you moved up really well. I actually thought you put the Glacier King down first and you were like looking for good places for him. Like, please just forget to put him in the zone. Please. But instead you move everything up super aggressively, which really sucks for Magnus because you left enough pieces back. You could have run to the zones. And then you've got those, what are they called? Fair and balanced effing ninja bears. Because I love those
super bombs, bears. By the way. I keep on telling people you could literally take any two abilities off of their card at random and they would still be worth 10 points.
Oh, they're amazing. They're absolutely amazing. Like the best 10 points, they're better than my drillers. And I think my drillers are a 10 point heavy. That's just amazing with Osram. I take fair and balanced bears over nomads. The nomads are worth more, supposedly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm 100% in agreement.
So like, I know I'm not going to get good board position. I know them, like, I'm not in a great place. So I spread everything out. My plan with the game going in was I'm just playing seven turns. I don't have to play four. I don't have to play five. I'm just going to play seven. Because that's what Magnus does. I'm going to lock you down for turn two. You're not going to get a lot of traction on your turn three. Turn four, you're going to start to finally build board space, but hopefully I score a zone. Turn five, maybe you get close to like, we're almost tying again, but then I can clear and score another one to go up. So my hope is that I can get to turn seven, either be up by a point or be up on secondary tiebreakers, which I wasn't. Because nomads are 11 points and you killed so much of my stuff. So I move up, you move up, place really well. You make sure the Glacier King toes the zone. You trample to get his animus up, which I forgot his animus had changed. So what on my turn, I'm like, I just forgot it. It did what it did.
Ah, yeah.
Cause no one plays Glacier Kings except for this guy, Mark.
Yeah, people keep on sleeping on it, but it's so good as an anchor piece.
So this is the part that you kept the best poker face ever, because I think right inside you were probably giggling with hystericalness. I spend a minute on my clock trying to like place a large proxy and a small proxy so that the Glacier King can't see Magnus. And we get lasers out. I get Jeff over. We find a place where I'm perfectly safe. I charge Magnus. Charge Magnus forward, cast escort, like do all my stuff. Lockdown so you can't advance towards me. Lockdown so you can't advance to the right to get good shots with your cast around me and just try to lock down as much board as I can. And then I run the Nomad in front of me. And when I put the Nomad down in front of me, you look at the table and you're like, sweet. He's done activating. He's knocked down. And I'm like, oh, that's what the Animus does.
So
that's probably bad for me.
You want to hear something funny? That wasn't a poker face. I had legitimately forgotten that I had cast my Animus until after you had put him down there.
Oh,
so then and I was just like, oh, wait, I do get to shoot you now. Cool.
So me being the genius that I am, I actually ran more models in the way and just let them get knocked down because, you know, I'm super bright. So I have like this real derp turn where I'm like just making three or four really dumb mistakes and Mark gets a good assassination on my caster. So the smart play is I do move my Vanguard up for shield guard to stay within three of Magnus. He's armor 19. My odds of surviving aren't bad if I only have to shrug one shot and I only have to eat two. Because, yeah, it's
better than 50-50. I needed to spike by three.
Well, and in my mind, Magic 1's out of range. Because, you know, Magic 1's 11 inches from me. And he's only range 8 and you have no sniping in your army. So I end my turn. All the math in my head says I'm fine. I got like an 80% chance to live through the assassination. And then Mark fires up his turn, shovels some models around, throws an axe. And I'm like, well, that's fine. He goes, ricochet within four. I'm going to hit your caster. And I'm like, oh, well, that's really bad for me. And of course, Magnus hits my caster, rolls just under average on damage. So I'm able to shrug and take nothing from it. And I'm pretty happy with that. And then he hits me with the first Glacier King shot, doesn't roll great damage. I'm able to shrug and take minimal. Hits me with the second Glacier King shot, does good damage, which is what he should have done all along. I shrug, shoots hits with the third, and then the Vanguard gets knocked back. So I managed to survive the turn, thankfully. The bears had to come in because if they don't, then there's nothing contesting zones. So that was awesome. I really like seeing bears. And I don't know if there was anything else you did in your turn, Mark. Should I have like brutalized one of my jacks and all my infantry? And
I think I did a bunch of jackhammers just to do jackhammers.
You gave me 9 or 6 corpses because Alexia likes corpses. So you jackhammered and then some of the, I think I gave you a couple because I was dumb for your champs too. And my thought was I was going to charge Alexi into your Glacier King. But then you did this thing called feeding.
Yeah. Feeding's great. An unchargeable Glacier King pretty much never dies.
Yeah, because my intent on that my next turn was to put Alexia into your Glacier King. And then I realized that I am more than 7 inches away and can't walk into you. So I ran models in to let you kill them to gain corpses to then walk in and just make attacks. And that failed epically. So my turn fires up. I shake with the knockdown one, allocate two, cast Calamity on the Glacier King. I do the math, and if I roll perfectly statistically average, I can probably kill the Glacier King, but I got to get some halberds in. So I cast Calamity, run Magnus, well, back Magnus away five. The six zombies I brought in move over and just sort of like surround Magnus so he can't be shot again because he's sort of terrified for his life because Magnus is an old man with a gibbled leg. Alexia shoots, does some damage. The Nomad walks in, does a bit of damage. The other Nomad walks in with three focus and does 15 damage on three attacks or four attacks, maybe 20 damage. And I leave you on, 15 at the end of my turn?
That sounds right-ish.
So I think I leave the Glacier King at 15. I'm like, well, that's not bad. Like, I knew I wasn't going to kill it, but I was going to do a bunch of damage. It's fine. Hopefully I can just survive this with Steelhead. And then Huckchuck does his bomb throw and charge and, like, murders the UA for the bears. And now I'm, like, super excited because, like, when you kill the bear UA, the bears become worse. So on my right-hand flank, I managed to kill the bear. We're playing title belt, so, like, I've got a zone that maybe if I kill two more bears, I can score. The Steelhead moved in. I think the Steelhead removed another bear. So now I've got one bear left in the zone. I have nothing in it to score it, so Magnus is still a turn away. I end my turn with just basically putting models into you and doing, like, zero work because I think I killed one champion.
That sounds right.
And now I feel sort of miserable because I killed a bear. I didn't kill a bear. I killed three models. I killed the bear handler, a champion. Nope, I killed two models. I had a great turn. I killed two models.
Yeah.
And then my turn ends. And then Mark plays his turn. Go ahead, Mark.
I jerk off and make some attacks and try fall short. Oh, and the one surviving bear on that flank does, like, literally nothing. I think it misses all of its attacks because it doesn't get gang bonus. So I need hard sevens. I'm like, nope, nope, nope.
So I have Alexia. She's, like, right in the middle of my army. She gets seven more corpses, and now I have no more corpses to actually use. All my Risen are in play. And I'm realizing my dice haven't been bad, but they haven't been great. And I'm on that verge of, like, I might tilt. So I take a minute at the start of my turn. I really rebreathe. I look at the board state. I'm like, if I can just get Magnus to the zone, kill that last bear, I don't need to make dice rolls to, like, maybe get this game to game seven. I just need Alexia to not die. So I put models around Alexia, and I put all my new Risen into his models. And I'm like, I just need stuff to not die. I space out really far on the left flank on the zone that I'm way away from, and I have no support. And all I do is I push guys out. Huckchuck then charges. Kills the last bear because Huckchuck was a boss. I think he one-shot him again because Huckchuck, again, was amazing. This was the game Huckchuck was MVP because I'm pretty sure Huckchuck actually killed all three of the bear unit. He might have actually bombed and killed the leader on the Trinity came in and then charged and killed the bear. And the next turn just charged and killed the next bear. Just Huckchuck just manned up, put his big boy pants on. Gets me that zone. I run Magnus and can't get to the zone yet, though. So now I'm sort of again on tilt because I placed Magnus poorly. I actually brought the zombies in and blocked myself from getting to the zone. It's like I'm sort of annoyed. I clock quickly, end my turn. I don't think I made a lot of attacks in the middle of the board. And I think I charged the bears on the other side and Anastasia to Bray through one knife. And you toughed with Moses.
Or fall short on damage? I can't remember. But one or no, the other,
I killed Moses and you toughed. And then, I killed Moses and toughed. The next turn I fell short on damage.
Yeah.
And then you killed him. And then your turn four.
But it's basically at this point you just walked me down. I physically couldn't get stuff into the zone that you're going to start scoring with Magnus. I can't remember if it was this turn or the turn after that we basically called it.
Turn after. I killed the Falco. So my next turn starts up. We just sort of shuffled, but I keep wrapping around the right flank. So on my right, I just keep pushing it behind Mark Carter with the loose Steelhead. I managed to use Eris to kill the Felcaller, and he was the only sort of last real unengaged model that could have contested. And I finally get Magnus to the zone, score one. And then there's just a wall of, he keeps killing Steelhead and I keep getting back Risen. So effectively I let him kill 10 Risen a turn and five or six Steelhead. And then the next turn he can kill 10 more Risen and five or six Steelhead. And then he can repeat again. I'm just going to keep getting models back.
Yeah. that was just pretty gnarly in general. Yeah, I think this was another one where I think I would have felt a lot happier going first, but I can't rely on it because you've got the plus one to hit roll or plus one to start roll. But if I'm allowed to bully the center of the board so that you don't feel comfortable using Magnus as a lockout, I think you would have had a much harder time. And so I wonder if I should have played Colgrima because she definitely has a lot more of that threat because what's it called? If you catch Mulga in feet, you're either close enough that Colgrima can spray through him, or you're far enough away that Colgrima can feet push you, and then Mulga can charge you.
Oh my god, that's so horrible. So I actually had a game plan for that. So I talked to John Ferris, who's a teammate of mine. So you actually, first two rounds, Alex played two of my friends.
Yeah, I'm aware. I played almost all Canadians.
Yeah, it was a straight up Canadian invasion this weekend.
We do that every year. So John and I were talking about after the match, and because again, we track first, second, and then we make notes in our comments for our team chat. And the note I made for your game is that I probably lose if I go second, because I think if you can get three or four champs in the zone, all game I killed two.
Oh, champs. They're never going away if you do that.
Like I said, all game I killed two champs. Now, I didn't roll great, but I didn't roll bad. Like, I wasn't like rolling all ones and twos. I didn't roll horrible, so I rolled okay, and I still wasn't able to kill champs. And then you heal up with feet, and I can't kill champs. So if you go first, I'm in a horrible place in that game. So winning the roll to win that game was what dictated, I think, the game.
Can we just call it the roll to win the game?
I think in this game it was. As shitty as it sounds, like this is the only game. This is one of two games I played that tournament where the roll to go first dictated the win of the game.
Yeah, I think I would agree in the sense that you screwed up and gave me like a 40%er on your caster, and it didn't work, so you just won. But you could have just not given that to me, and the game would have gone in the same way, basically. Except Magnus would be on full health instead of what, five boxes.
Yeah, you left me on five. Yeah, no, I agree. That game definitely would have played out differently had I gone second, which, again, is, I don't know if it's a flaw of the game right now. I just think it's maybe some of the new scenarios will help change it, or maybe that we have to focus on giving better ideas to PP on how to fix it, because I think that the role to go first dictating so much of the game is probably problematic, especially for newer players.
Yeah, I really think a lot of that is down to the scenario packet, and that's a 16-17 changeover thing, you know, because I think SR16 was actually the year, for my money, where it was probably least influential, you know, over the 5 years before that. And then 17 pops back in, and the scenarios are a significantly larger factor. Yeah, it's the most important it's been in a while.
I don't think it's the scenarios that are the problem. Because I feel like the game right now, and I mean, like, it's always this to an extent, but it's about bullying board state. And it feels like if you go first, you get to set up, like, a circle of threat. And it's on your opponent to try and, like, answer you. And I mean, the scenarios, of course, have that, what's it called? They're the pressure that allows these bullies to work. But, like it's still fundamentally like an attritional problem. Like if I'm allowed to put champs where you basically can't leave your zone, like your deployment zone, without like being seriously threatened, then of course you're going to have a terrible game.
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of the change from SR 16 to 17 and the way the lists are being made now, because I think when we first switched to Mark III, threat projection wasn't the game. It was about just learning new models, right? The first 6 months of like Mark III, we were just learning how the new game worked. Ranges became more predictable because power attack throwing your own models was slowly leaving the game. All the little tricks were leaving. So it became, can I shoot you?
I'm not so sure if I agree with this, because like Kane 2, I remember like at the beginning of Mark III was like oppressive, and there were a number of lists that were just like, you can literally never be within 19 inches of my Warcaster or you lose.
But those lists weren't designed to win scenario. They were designed to win assassination.
So I agree.
Still, you can still move models up and you can still gain board control. You just couldn't gain position with your caster to have your caster effect up. Because I played 72 to start Mark III, and like him into Kane 2 was who got closer to who first, right?
Yeah.
Because I want to say their threats were really similar. I think with the Arc node, with Blessing of Vengeance, you actually out-threat Kane by an inch. So yes. Like Kane has to play back to you and you get to bully a bit. But I don't think that changed. Like I couldn't win games via where I placed my caster. I won games via being able to get to a zone and then slowly drag out a fight with oracular vision or being able to assassinate. And then I think assassinations were a huge part of the start of Mark III. And now I see a ton of more players with the new packet having switched to just threat projection and winning on scenario. Because at the start of Mark III, I played almost all of the first year just trying to kill casters.
Yeah, like I agree with that. I lived and breathed Krios 1 for like until themes came out.
Yeah, that was the same for me. I played Krios 3 with the double redeemer list where you just ran your pony, shot your own pony with force hammer spell, and then killed his caster.
Ha! I really until they changed. I mean, maybe it's still valid, but Krios 3 in exemplar theme with double redeemers that are on Bastion Seneschals. So you get the blessed whatever the plus range damage on the redeemers are, and you can fully fuel them between a reclaimer and the vassal solos.
God, that's gross. Can't wait till their CID's done and then go back to playing Menoth for a while.
I'm seriously considering going back to Menoth.
Oh my God, we'll I'm considering going back to Menoth.
This is now a Menoth podcast.
Oh my God, I'm going back to Nemoth 3 if you guys go back to Menoth.
This will be my first time back to Menoth in 14 years.
I played them WTC 2016.
Okay, you have much more relevant experience than I do.
Yeah, I switched to the start of Mark III because I fell in love with Oracular Vision on 72 as like a battle group ability. I thought it was just phenomenal, and then his ability to play into Wormwood, who was like the boogeyman at the time.
Yeah,
that got me so angry is the Revelator. Plus 72 was like the ultimate like kill Wormwood tech, and then they just don't put out the Revelator until Wormwood's like unplayable.
Just unplayable trash. Poor Wormwood. Poor Circle.
And they're getting their Thorn love.
I have so much of that sitting in my closet too. So anyways, I totally derailed our topic again. My apologies.
All good. We like meandering here.
Alex, how did your round 3 go?
Oh, my round 3. Oh my gosh. You guys caught me without my sheet up. So my round 3 was against Mike, and then my handwriting on his last name is truly abysmal, but it's Mike D something from the Tri-Cities area in Washington. I've lost at this point, and like I don't know. I've lost in round 2. I'm probably out of the running to get in on the one available X and 1 spot. Spoiler alert, I actually am. So I start drinking, and boy, does it help take the edge off, because I was still on tilt from the dice in my game with John, and just from colossally fucking up my own turn in terms of time management. But, you know, get a beer in me. Just like really takes the edge off, and I play this game against Amon Edraza. He wins the roll to go first, casts mobility and synergy, and runs his jacks up. I turn around, develop my board position, very meticulously minding the dervish's threat range of 11 inches. Because if I give them, you know, if I give them an opening, like Zadesh is potentially at risk. So my first couple of turns, I have to be really meticulous about that. But Animantrax rolls up, starts popping some incidental damage onto his jacks, and that's it. It's back to him. He starts doing the math on the threat range on my Animantrax and then my my bugs, and realizes, you know, he's either gotta commit or back up. And he moves around his pieces, but he kind of takes like a position that's attempting to do both at the same time, and pushes some jacks into my threat range and keeps some out. So the Animantrax rolls up, blows up like three of his lights on the one side. He basically has nothing that can contest the right-hand zone anymore. My bugs go in, mess up some of his lights. The birds go in, mess up some of his lights. He keeps pretty much all his heavies safe thanks to the combination of Enliven and Parry. Turns around, retaliates. Between the defensive strikes from my feet and counter charges and so forth, he doesn't get a lot done and suffers a lot of damage in return. Plus, my Animantrax is hanging out with an Agonizer bubble up around it, controlling my zone. There's just not enough force over there able to, you know, do what he needs. I turn around, blow up almost the rest of his entire battle group, score more zones. He turns around and realizes, okay, I have no ability to come back in this game. And then I score up to 5 and the game's over. So yeah, that was it. Mike was a super fun opponent, and like, just as far as somebody, like, when you're coming down from tilting hard, I think I got exactly the right guy to put me back at like, okay, life is good again. I no longer hate this game.
Those are always the best games.
Yeah. Yeah.
So guess what? I forgot to do my round 2 because I was so excited about talking about my round 3. So we should do my round 2 now and then continue on to round 4 and then edit to fix.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So my round 2, I played against Craig from Canada because it's a total Canadian invasion.
Is this Craig with a K?
Yes.
Oh, I played him in round 4.
Really, really smart guy. His circle tech is insane. He can land into your opponent's deployment zone on top of one or into your AD. Like, I watched him in the Champions on Sunday, and he took out half of a unit of Croaks before his opponent could even have their first turn. Really brutal stuff. I was not expecting that, but thankfully, it wasn't really relevant into champion bricks. And he was playing Baldur 1, Baldur 2, both in Bones of Obros. Very similar lists in terms of loadout. Maybe minor differences in the heavies. One was more melee-focused. The other was more spell-focused. He plays Baldur 2, and I play Madrek, and I win the roll-off, which is huge because it gives me a ton of pressure. Basically, by turn 2, I land my Glacier King in the middle of the board, and I kill 2 of his heavies, and there's basically no way he can get anything onto me in any consequence. He tanks for a while and looks at, or he can land like 2 heavies trampling on me, but after doing the math, it's pretty clear that it just won't work. Like, he can maybe half kill the Glacier King if he pulls the trigger now. And so he tries to crush a flank of champions instead. And it turns out a bunch of heavies have a really hard time hitting Def 16 champs. He uses Megalith to drop their Def down and then starts trying to break them apart. But by the end of the game, I've closed out one flank. I've held the center. And he has just barely at that point taking out the champs on that flank. And so I think by the bottom of 7, I think I win 6-2, 6-3, something in that ballpark. But yeah, it was just really unfortunate. I think it was a bad list matchup for him. He was doing a lot of smart stuff with like shield guards, stone porting, the stone port plus shift stuff. I have not seen that from anybody before. And yeah, he was a blast to play with, really polite. It was a hell of a game. But I think it was just unfortunate that he ran into my champ brick, because I don't think either of his lists would do particularly well into it, especially when it goes first, because then I get to bully the center, and what's he going to do? Feed me his heavies?
Right. That's
nothing. Nothing trades efficiently into my stuff. And I've had a lot of people that I respect a lot in terms of War Machine tell me that the Baldur 2 Madrek matchup is bad, but I've played a lot of good people at conventions at this point playing Baldur 2, and none of them have been able to like give a game where I didn't feel like in complete control. And I think it's just like they have a low volume of medium accuracy, decent damage attacks that don't do well into the champs, and the champs will just kill heavies, like even through Roots of the Earth.
Yeah. So you straight up think that estimation is not accurate.
The only one where it might not be good is the double Woldrath version. If they're really good about using terrain plus the rock wall. I haven't seen that one yet. I've seen one Woldrath. I've seen no Woldrath. But I haven't seen two Woldrath. That's like the only one that would like maybe give me problems. Because like a Glacier King takes like two turns to get through a Woldrath. Like even with Jackhammer assistance and troops getting in on it. And he gets to use the rock wall to control how and when I go in.
That makes sense.
Which is way more valuable on huge bases. And if he's able to use the rock wall somehow to protect both of his Woldraths against the majority of my alpha, I think he will have a truly terrible time. Or I will have a truly terrible time.
Somebody will have a terrible time.
Yes. That's to be discovered at some point in the future when I run into that.
Okay, round four.
So back to the Canadian invasion thing.
Yeah.
Round four. So I came down with a bunch of friends, and then I came down from Kamloops. So we're in the interior. And then the Vancouver guys came down. I think there was a carload of them, so four or five. And then Victoria came across, and there was another four or five of Victoria guys. The previous weekend, I was at a convention with Chris Dancox in Red Deer. And the gentleman we spoke the most about was on Chris Dancox's WTC team last year, Greg Shad. And Greg Shad is probably the most terrifying player I've ever played in my life. The guy is absolutely amazing at the game, sees it really well, has a ton of experience with the caster. He's playing a caster that I just have, in my mind, almost no answer for unless my opponent makes a mistake. So I'm hoping to dodge Greg, and that's my draw for round four. So I'm like, sweet, a 3-1 gets in. All the guys I played had played and continued playing. No one had dropped, so hopefully my SOS is good because in my mind, I've probably lost this game if I don't win the roll to go first. So we walk to the table. He looks at me. We don't even discuss list who we're going to pick. We just grab dice. I'm like, I'm going to ADR in Anastasia. And he's like, okay. I do a quick ADR swap, and I swap out one of my bashers for a – or no. Yep, one of my bashers. No, I dropped one of my free solos to put Anastasia in, and I just swapped out my two blasters for two gun bunnies because I thought the POW 12s would be better than sprays. And he drops Nemo 3 because, like, Nemo 3 is a champ. And for some reason, when you're running 52 Steelhead plus Alexia, 37 million E-leaps in a turn probably kills my whole army because it's too tough to space out 4 inches. So yeah, we roll the dice to go first. I win because of the Anastasia bonus.
So I've got a question for you. In my experience with Nemo, if he goes second, he becomes vastly worse. Like, the reason I had to change my Cold Grimma list to deal with Nemo, even though I've got massive anti-shooting tech, is because I hated going second into him so much. But I could like beat him with a list that was much better against the rest of the field if I was willing to just gamble on the 50-50 to go first.
I would 100% agree. I've played this match probably 12 times in the last couple months because it's the one match, you know, he's relatively common. And it's the one of those common that there's two lists. They're horrible for me. And it's Nemo 3 or Iron Mother and double tap, because mother double tap means I can't play Ostrom into COC, which means I'm stuck playing a bunch of dudes into six sprays a turn that just kill me. And I never get to the taps. So I've got a lot of experience into it. Like in the last month or so, and every game I've gone second, I've lost. I've never won a game I've gone second, and I'm 50-50 in the games I go first. So like, this is a horrible matchup. If I lose the roll, I get lucky and I win the roll. We set up pretty predictably. I do like an even spread where I put two bashers one side, a driller, a basher on the other side with Forge Guard on each side with my mortar on the side that's short of basher, the eliminators on the outside, and a hole sort of hidden behind because I just don't want them to die. Gorman DeWolf right on the deployment line because he's sort of key in this match. Eris 6 inches in front of my caster and Kel Balok towards the flag. So I start my first turn. I drop my pre-measuring sticks. I just measure to be out of range. And I said it about four times. Like, the only way you can get to me is by force hammering your own jack. He's like, yep, perfect. I will set everything up more than 19 from your striders. He activates his turn. He moves the Striders, looks at Gorman, goes, I got to be 16 inches from Gorman. I'm like, you've got to be more than 16. So we do a bunch of measuring. We make sure we got sticks down. We lay out the 16 and a half. He's like 17 inches from Gorman. He's like, okay, you know, if you risk it, you scatter, you're probably going to scatter off me. And then I think he realized that I had a play. So he moves a Firefly in front, well out of blast radius of the guys behind. And then sort of dirtles everything up. So it's outside of my like charge threat of 15, but inside the next turn, I'm just going to get shot to death. I start my turn two. I realize the game's a coin flip. I've got fire for effect on my mortar because like that's where fire for effect goes. I've got Blood Dodger on Ostrom himself. I opt to just go for it. I put snipe. I drop Bullet Dodger, put snipe on Gorman DeWolf. I feet, push myself forward. I think I energize her to get my jacks forward because I wanted to be super aggressive. Gorman walks up, or not Gorman, sorry, the mortar moves up, takes this booster shot of the Firefly, hits, spikes damage, rocks, I don't know, 14 damage on the Firefly, leaving it like 8 boxes. Kel Balok walks Kel Balok could run to the flag, sits, aims from the flag, does 6 to the Firefly, and I use one of my gun buddies to shoot the Firefly, kill the Firefly. I then run my Basher in to engage the 2 Striders, and Gorman walks up and shoots my Basher in the back with a blind bomb. And turn two, I blind both Striders. And I'm like, Kate, I think I've just won this game.
This kills the Nemo player.
that's how you come back from that.
That from really horrible where I think I've lost. I've eaten probably 20 minutes of my clock just getting everything set ready. Like I'm already way down on clock. At this point, I'm running everything forward. Your Striders are done. Everything just runs to engage. So I just run everything at him. Forge guard run. Everything runs. We're playing the scenario with the 2 rectangular zones, flag in each corner, objectives in the middle. And then all I do is try and make sure everything is spaced more than 4 from Gorman. Eris walks up to get ready to shoot Nemo. I think she walked up and took a shot at Finch, hit Finch and did like 3 points of damage. And then my turn ends. I'm in really good position. Greg, again, takes some time, thinks about it. He's like, well, I'm really pooched. Opts to not feet, which is probably the right play. Because I've left most of my battle group outside of melee. Only one of my drillers can actually get focus. He does some positioning, moves the Striders apart so I can't blind them both again, pulls a bunch of his Firefly back, engages the minimal amount possible, puts the +2 strength spell on a Firefly, beats the hell out of one of my Bashers, makes sure he's contesting everything but my flag. I score 1 point on his 2. I activate on my turn. I'm like, okay, I need to score a couple points and just be really good in the scenario. Huckchuck comes through from the side, kills a mechanic. My eliminators move in, kills some mechanics, just trying to feed up my forge guard because he's got too many mechanic units and he uses them to screen the forge guard. So I've got the double eliminators come in and they clean up most of the mechanics. One of my spray bunnies moves into the left zone to score it, shoots to free up the forge guard from the second mechanic. The forge guard then are able to charge the Firefly in the zone, remove the Firefly. So now I'm scoring his zone, but I've got nothing for the flag because I made a mistake and didn't bring Anastasia on the right side. So I clear out my right zone, all but a single mechanic. So I'm going to score 2, go up to 3-0. I blind the 1 Strider and I walk in. I manage to Iana for harm on the Strider that has Electrify. So the Lord Armor Strider, and I get lucky with driller dice and the mortar and I remove one of the Striders. So he starts his feet turn. He's got 1 Strider blinded, 1 Strider removed. Dynamo is disrupted. And he failed to kill on his turn. He failed to kill Gorman DeWolf and failed to kill Eris. So he starts up his turn, feats, gets a bit of work done. Dynamo with like no focus or 1 focus from Arlen is still able to remove one of my heavies. But at this point, he realizes he's not going to contest my flag. He's not going to be able to score any zones. He's just not going to get enough work done. So he removes the heavies he can, pushes back and is able to score his flag. But I score my flag about 4-1. I can easily clear the zone again by killing what's on the flag, and I can easily clear my zone again. So we talk it out. I don't even worry about clearing off his flag. I clear my zone. I hide my cash man in the forest. I remove a couple more models. I score 2. He scores 1. And I'm like, you're not going to be able to contest. I score 2 on your turn. You score 1, and the game ends. And he agrees, and we just end the game. But that whole play came down to just that one lucky moment where I'm able to hit that defense 14 jack in the back. Def 10. Plus melee bonus because bashers are hard to hit when they're in melee.
Really,
and hard. That's how my game with Gray ends. Yeah, it's amazing that Gorman still misses on a five, right? Silly Gorman, he should hit on twos.
I miss the good old days of Gorman Iris too.
Oh, so do I. That's why I play Gorman Iris one.
Don't romanticize the past. Those times were horrible.
You mean great?
Ostrom loved those times.
You don't say.
Also when you couldn't pre-measure and Iris would prevent you from allocating if she was too close. So you would just have to like pray that you deployed correctly and didn't like screw your own colossal out of running. The good old days of quality privateer press design, not this new agey player moment stuff.
Pre-measuring is amazing. Cleans the game up so much better.
Oh, yes, yes. I love pre-measuring so much. It's such a good part of the game. Like,
It's the transparency. Like, when we played Mark and my gaming ace, Greg, so I'll go back and I was in Grotzcon in Red Deer, and I got to watch Chris Dancox play. And, like, Chris and I are friends. We've known each other for years. Corey Burns plays at my club every month or so when he travels through town, so I see these guys lots. And, like, they're the guys that when they mark damage, they show you on the iPad. They leave it where you can see it. They're really open about what they're trying to do. They're really transparent about how they play. But I watch Chris, and Corey does it too. They ask, do you agree? This is my intent. Do you agree? And I play a lot with Jeff Everett. And Jeff Everett's a very intuitive player. He plays the game very intuitively. So he just sort of does things. And he's not like super methodical. And then you play with Greg, and Greg communicates well, but like doesn't ask. He just sort of goes, I'm out, and then goes on to his next move because he just makes that declarative statement. But watching Chris play the game, he's like, do you agree? Do you agree? This is my intent. Does this make sense to you? Do we agree? Made me think when I went to this tournament, when I played my first game, my intent was to actually change as a player to adapt and take that on and be like, I want to make sure every move I make is super clean. But on top of being super clean, I want to be transparent and think my entire play out. So rather than like having to put proxy bases down, I'll just ask them, like, do we agree that this works? Move on. Do we agree that this works? And move on, right? So, like, that's what I love about pre-measuring. It allows the game to become more technical and less just you have to just hopefully guess and be right. And both players
get 100% on board.
And both players get to agree on a game state.
Yes. Preach. Preach.
But I think everyone's bought in. People that are playing Mark III have bought into pre-measuring.
Yeah, I concur 100%. And that's really like a totally worthwhile pursuit too, is when you see like a new practice in sportsmanship that makes you see like, oh yeah, that really works. Like, yeah, to actually take on next week, like pushing yourself to have that, you know, be the game experience you're delivering and the level of like agreement and sportsmanship you're facilitating in the game.
Yeah, I don't dot my I's and cross my T's as much as I'd like, but on the important things, like, I definitely do that beforehand. Like, on the things where I'm just like, oh, I go to here. Like, if somebody was like, oh, I'm not sure if you were in on that, I'd be like, okay, fine, I'll just, like, bump it back. Like, unless it was like, I can run 10 inches and I run 4 and they, like, start throwing a hissy fit. Something like that. But, yeah, if there's any important measurement that, like, I'm actually, like, I wouldn't just, like, cede it out of hand if an opponent thought I was off. Like, I'll have them measure it. I'll be like, can you measure these two distances for me just so that you're happy with it? But this is getting too much into our sportsmanship episode, which part two will be coming out week after this.
It's like time travel.
Oh, all right, I'm starting to understand how the privateer press devs feel like in the future at all times.
What?
So I guess we go into Mark's round
four, CID, right? And internal testing. Alex, yeah. I believe, goes first.
Oh okay.
I feel 100% bad for PP's devs.
Yeah, it's kind of a thankless job.
Those guys are my heroes. Especially when you see them posting on Facebook and they're always so positive and happy.
Oh yeah, that's like a remarkable force of will thing.
Just rage out CID, just like ban, 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 ban. Sick of y'all. Like, no more Mr. Nice Dev. We stopped caring about, like, pretending we give a shit about you guys.
Okay, so my round four was against Craig Halmer. So, Corey, your local guy, or No, he's local-ish to you guys, right?
He's Victoria, so I see him at most of the events I go to.
Okay. And then, Mark, you played Craig in round two. He had Baldur 2, Baldur 1 in the pairing, both in Bones of Orboros, so this is really clearly a Zadesh drop for me, because Morgul doesn't do that kind of damage, and he frankly doesn't care about the blind or push shenanigans. So I put Zadesh down into it. He goes first.
Sorry, Baldur 2?
Oh, yeah, Baldur 2, yeah. He goes first, surprises me with the Stone Shaper double teleport, drops a rock hammer, and kills, like, two of my beast handlers. that Stone Shaper stuck around in my back lines for a really long time, partially because I didn't understand how the shifting rule worked, because if he was still... He's always in formation with himself, so the unit goes, the rocks do nothing, but he can still shift, which blew my mind. But he moves his battle group up, forgets to activate his Swamp Gobber Chef, which is kind of important. That Gobber Chef never activated and was supposed to have run and got his close flag on Recon 2. So I turn around and develop my position, basically trying to exploit my long threat range pieces like the Animantrax and the Arcadon to set the line of battle in a favorable way for me. The Animantrax breaks one unit of stones on my first turn, which is super nice because that cuts down the teleport threat immensely. He turns around, teleports his guy, rock hammers more of my stuff. And my brain just died.
Rock hammered stuff. Things happened.
Yeah. He rock hammers my stuff. He moves up his battle group and daisy chains out Roots of the Earth in such a way that his entire battle group is rootsed. So everything's sitting arm 23. He's got a guardian and a warden hanging out in my flag zone, and Megalith standing right nearby. Another guardian hanging out behind the woods, and another warden somewhere in the middle. I think Craig really very seriously underestimated my potential damage output. Like he mentioned, he forgot about the strength component of Zadesh's feat and didn't internalize how much damage I was going to be able to do. So my battle group collides with his. I take out his warden and guardian in my zone, move my mist speaker onto the flag. I kill his center warden, put some damage on Megalith, put some damage on his other guardian, and score 2 points to his zero. And then he turns around, punches out some of my heavies. I just start trading down real fast because I've got this really big scenario edge that is like I'm within an easy shot of winning on scenario. So I start trading him my heavies, you know, for pennies on the dollar. But eventually, basically, both of our battle groups trade down to nothing. And Zadesh and an Agonizer, my Bogtrog Mist Speaker hung out on that flag all game like a boss. But Zadesh and my Agonizer charge and flank up and finish his last beast in the zone. And that's game. I win on scenario.
Yeah, so, I caught the tail end of that game. You didn't have a lot of models left on either side of the board. That was that game looked really grindy.
I suppose so. It was I took a big lead early on and then really kind of stopped playing for attrition. Like, I am just going to go hard for scenario and win that as fast as possible. And he was the one who was like doing all the pushing back and grinding. And he really started to like slowly chisel me down very effectively.
So you mentioned the Gobber Chef at the beginning. How big of a deal do you think that was?
If the Gobber Chef runs and scores on my turn two, that means I either have to pitch the Arcadon at his flag or my Swamp Gobbers at his flag, which I don't hate. But it requires some different maneuvering and positioning. I think if he had put the Gobber Chef in, I would have played much more deliberately for attrition. So, like, attempting to kill Megalith instead of his zone-contesting Wold Warden, The game would have gone significantly longer, and I would have shifted to reprioritize damage and possibly angling for an assassination on Balder. That was on the table on my last turn, but I went for the scenario thing. I think because the really decisive thing to the shape of the game was Craig dramatically misestimating my damage output, like the soldiers getting up to PS22 and they're coming into his wolds at dice minus one. That was not great for him. And I think if he had not done the thing where, you know, he daisy chains roots and just pushes everything into my threat range, more or less, if he hangs back and consolidates longer, I start doing a thing where I put up the cloud wall. And the Animantrax maybe makes some more headway, but I don't think we'll engage on conditions that are as dramatically favorable for me. Like, I'll probably have to start the fight by committing the Animantrax at some point. So from my eyes, that was sort of the nub of the game right there. And I don't think I'm ill-equipped to win the game if he doesn't make that mistake. It just plays differently. And like, either of those two changes, you know, we do go from me trying to rush scenario very quickly to a much longer game with either of those changes, probably ending on 7 or with a caster death.
Fair enough. So my round 4 was easily one of the funniest games I have ever played. I don't remember if I'd already told you this story, Corey, but so round 4, I walk up to the table and my opponent just like walks up to me with like this big dick swagger, and he's like, "Here's how it's gonna go, motherfucker. You can't play Madrak into Animag, so I'm gonna play Animag and you're gonna play Kolgrima." And then I was like, "Okay, I play Madrak." And he was like, that's terrible. Like, you can't win this. And then I just destroy him. I go first. He gets bears for free with the Blightbringer because I didn't really respect its output. But then my Glacier King goes into the center of his board, kill some ogres and a Hellmouth with the armor buff on it, and nothing can get on it. And it just goes downhill from there for him. And eventually I think I win with like 11 CPs, which I think is actually the reason that I got in over Greg, is because I think it came down to CP tiebreaks. I think we both had 10 SOS. So farming that game out to the full turn 7 was definitely helpful. But well, yeah, it's kind of a common theme of that Madrak list. If you go first, Glacier King runs 12 inches, so you're at the 19 inch line. You can charge anything within 11 inches of him, 13 if they let you Hunter's Mark from there, and you hit something that's kind of valuable but lets you be in a position where the feat means that they can't do anything to you, and then you get your pick of the litter of the targets the turn after that. And if that's allowed to happen, you don't lose, which is why the Madrak list, I mean, it's so dramatically good going first. I wonder if I should go back to double Fire Eaters or Raiders just to have more resiliency in going second. It would mean less armor cracking, but I need to play that matchup more, or just matchups and more with that version of the list, and see if I can be more resilient to going second with a variation like that.
That's actually, I've been talking with Charles and a couple of the other guys that I chat with, and I'm switching out my Magnus list for another caster, sort of the same variant on the list, but because I think that Magnus needs first turn to be effective in the game, and some of the other casters that really aren't seeing the same table time can actually play back from going second. I think that's where Ostrom's strength come is. Ostrom can play second because he projects such a big threat with his jacks that he can come back into a game, but Magnus can't. If Magnus plays second, it's like a two-hour game, and we kill a bunch of models, and I hopefully squeak a win out.
Yeah, that's something I actually really miss about being able to play Doomy 2, is he basically casts no spells on turn one, like maybe some rushes if you get to go first and you're feeling greedy. But like outside of that, he just dumps all of his fury into the stone and just walks up as far as you're going to let him, and all of his beasts run. And like you don't care if you go first or second. Like, I mean, you prefer first because you get a bully more, but it's not like that bad if you go second. And that's definitely something I'm trying to figure out with my second list of the pair. Maybe there's some kind of grim list, because he has a walk shoot threat range of like 23 inches out of the deployment zone. So like you got to be really careful with like key solos and stuff. I don't know, but it's something interesting to think about.
Thank you for listening to Dominate for Two. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Got a question or an episode idea? Email us at dominateforTwo.podcast@gmail.com.